Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Retro Raw Rundown here on Antidropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, joined as always by Sondra when we do retro. Hi Sondra, how are you?
Hi Kenny, I'm doing all right. Just you busy as always, getting ready for Metropolis this weekend. I'm really excited for the Superman celebration. But yeah, I guess this is kind of a weird Raw to talk about. It's so weird. I don't even know how we're going to talk about this one.
Yes, so it's very weird. But before we do talk about it, I need to talk about something else first, if that's all right with you.
That is fine.
So basically, just to kind of give you guys a full look at what was happening, we have decided to postpone the Booker T tour inside the Oaks. Everyone who had bought a ticket has been emailed. They're getting refunded within 48 hours. I've already done about 45% of the refunds already. It's a manual process, which sucks. But the real reason is because we usually book our travel a fairly long time before talent comes over. And before the Undertaker tour, because of everything that happened, we just couldn't book travel because we didn't know what was going to happen. If the Undertaker wasn't going to be able to come, then basically the company was done. So there was no point in kind of doing that. So as soon as the tour happened, we then worked with Booker's people, who and Booker and his guy have been very gracious with us and very, great. And the issue is that the transportation to get Booker and his guy over here is costing about 3.5 times the amount that it usually does to get people over here. We're talking like in the five figures of pounds to get two people from the US to the UK, which is not usually how much it would cost you. So we tried to figure out every kind of solution we could. Booker was in quite a strict schedule because he has stuff on right after the tour. We just couldn't find dates around that we could move it to, and we didn't really want to move it to something that we couldn't definitely do given the circumstances. So we made the decision to postpone the tour for now. Booker and us still intend to do the tour down the line. We're just going to take a little bit of time and then come back to it. So because we don't have new dates yet, we are refunding everybody, like I say, and that's that. So the thing is, if you can imagine from my perspective, the last thing I wanted to do is to postpone something again, given that the last 12 months seems to just be mostly postponements. Edge, Undertaker, whatever. But it is what it is. We had to do it. It was for the best of the business. We have other stuff planned for in the next few months that I'm hoping to get contracted and announced soon. And I'm already working on some stuff for 2020. So everything's good. Booker's been great to deal with. He looks forward to coming over. He completely understood the situation. Because, he's not going to want us to basically pay all the money out and the tour is like, running like super noodles. And that would be for him. He would be getting super noodles if we were to pay
And I
these
don't think Booker T
mental.
wants super
He does
noodles.
not want super noodles. So because basically Booker T doesn't want to eat super noodles, and that's why the tour's not happening. I mean, you can fill in the blanks yourself, but that is essentially where it got to. But he's been really good about it. And look, if we had had to do it, we would have done it. But he was like, yeah, let's like do it in a few months, and let's like do that rather than do it in a way that you guys are just going to completely lose your ass on travel. Because he's a good guy. He wouldn't want us to do that. So that's where things are. Stay tuned for more tour announcements. Everybody's getting refunded. Like I say, I've done almost half of them already. If you did buy a ticket to Booker T and you somehow haven't been refunded in the next like 3 4 days, give us a shout. We'll figure out what's happened and get it sorted. But that is that. So that's the Booker T situation. So with this, Raw is Owen. The best thing I would suggest that you do if you want to really know the ins and outs of the situation is to get the Observer, and go and read that issue for, I guess, May 3rd. Let me get the date in a second. But anyway, it's the issue on the Owen Hart situation because I can't read it all to you. Obviously, the big thing was that WWE did keep the show going. I don't think anybody in WWE now would say that they should have kept the show going, but. I know some people are blame WWE for that. I've explained before why I'm a little bit more lenient on it. How do you feel about it? I mean, obviously they kept the show going. Do you kind of see it as, high pressure situation? I guess any of us don't know what we've done, or do you still think even with all the high pressure stuff, they needed to just shut it down and that's that? Where do you kind of sit on that part of it?
I mean, I can't say that I would know what to do in that situation. It's looking back on it with hindsight, I think absolutely the show should have been stopped. I don't think it was reasonable to continue. I don't think it was fair to the performers that it had to continue, right? Because their friend just died, you know, like they've cut from the network that interview with Jeff Jarrett and Deborah, where Deborah's like very clearly distraught. But I mean, I think the show should have been stopped. I can't say that if I were in that high pressure situation, what to do, because you have to make split second decisions, you know, like you have to make those decisions as the show is going on in real time. So I don't vilify the company for continuing the show, but I don't think it was the right decision at all.
No, so we talked on the, I mean, it feels horrible to do a plug at this point in the show, but over on patreon.com/insidetheropes, where we did cover Over the Edge. I'm opening a beer for this one, by the way, guys, so sorry. So the on the Over the Edge review that we did on Patreon, where we kind of tried to cover the show and we just kind of didn't really do the Owen Hart part of it because that had actually been left out of the pay-per-view broadcast, the network broadcast, so we just kind of covered everything else. But what happened was there was the Blue Blazer pre-tape interview with Kevin Kelly and Owen Hart that I guess had been filmed earlier on that day. And then next week, there was just crowd shots. And then when it cut back to to Jim Ross, Jerry Lawler wasn't there. Apparently, Jerry Lawler had like ran into the ring as soon as the stuff had happened. Essentially, Owen Hart in his Blazer costume was going to be coming down from a scaffold, doing, you know, that entrance, a kind of Sting spoof, I guess. And he ended up slipping out of his harness. He fell head first, landed on a turnbuckle, and flipped into the ring. That was what happened.
Wasn't it that there was a quick release on the harness? Like, wasn't it supposed to be like a gag where they rappel him down and he was supposed to like almost fall but not quite and like struggle and then release it, but it released right away?
It released before he was ready to release it, yeah. But that ended up with him like slipping out of the full harness because of what
Okay.
happened. See, he fell head first, landed on a turnbuckle. Apparently, a lot of people at ringside said it was pretty clear that he'd broken his neck. Like, a lot of people in the audience thought it was a crash test dummy and it was part of the show.
Oh, wow.
And then, so JR had said, and I was trying to find the verbiage for it. This is not part of the entertainment portion of the show. This is as real as it can get. This is not a wrestling storyline. And they tried to revive him. Apparently, he went from white to grey to purple to blue. There was a guy in the Kansas City Fire Department who said he was killed instantly. They tried mouth to mouth. They tried putting an oxygen mask on him. There is no footage. Like I say, I said it on the Over the Edge review. I heard that I always heard rumors that there was some sort of satellite feed where you may have saw part of his descent before it cut away, but I've never seen it, so I don't think it exists. But they don't at any point show you the EMTs working on Owen Hart at all. Jerry Lawler, when he came back to the announce desk, I've never seen the look in Jerry Lawler's face before or since. And I think at one point, Jim Ross is like trying to like you know move the show on. And then Jerry Lawler, very out of character, just said it doesn't look good at all. And that was kind of the last that they said about it until later on that night when they Jim Ross had confirmed that Owen Hart had died on air. So that's it. So I mean, basically the way I thought would be the best way to kind of tackle this is we'll quickly go through the show, which is not really going to take us that long. Because it's a tribute show. And then I just put out to you guys on Facebook about what you'd like us to talk about. So some of it, I guess, will be more like for me watching at the time. Some of it will be for Sandra having only really, I guess, watched this now. You know, you'd never watched this episode before, right?
No, I've never watched this before.
So
I always knew about it, but it was never one that I really checked out.
So the show opens with the WWF intro, and then it goes to wrestlers lining up on the ramp. At the front, there's Vince and Linda and Stephanie. Austin's near the back. Everybody's kind of there. I think the only person who's not there is Undertaker. I remember reading a rumor that he was away visiting Brett at that point. I don't know if that's true or whether he was just. Or whether they just didn't want to have, you know, they've in all the wrestler deaths that have ever happened, they've never had him come out. They've never had that character be there. So,
Well, he wasn't on this show.
no, he wasn't. So in the Observer, it said Undertaker never appeared, as apparently they didn't want him seen out of character, but maybe he was. Maybe he was away seeing Bret. I don't know. So
Why is it okay for Kane to be out of character but not Undertaker?
I don't know. They've always had that thing, right? Undertaker is the only guy that they've always kind of just kept off camera for this kind of stuff. And I don't know. I mean, because Undertaker at this point, I think everybody, I mean, everybody fucking knew that he was, but that was just the decision they made. And it's the same with all wrestler deaths. He never appeared on that kind of stuff. What did you make of before we get to the video package, just the way they opened the show, the way they had everybody kind of on the stage, with Owen, pads on their arms and stuff. Like, did it feel to you like it was a good tribute to him? Did it feel too overproduced? Like, how did it feel to you watching it?
I mean, it definitely felt produced, especially with the McMahons front and center. Like Stephanie and Linda and Vince are like right out in front. But I mean, I think it's nice. I think it's nice for the whole roster to get together and gather and pay tribute to him for sure. Like, I think if they wouldn't have done something like that, it would have almost felt cheap, like they didn't care enough to even put together a tribute. So I don't know. I thought it was nice. It is weird to see, like, it's weirder in 1999 than it would be today, I think, to see like all the baby faces and heels all together on the stage. But
You
this
mean
is such
because
a.
they used to think and they used to understand in wrestling that having all the baby faces and heels around the ring in angles is rubbish?
Right. But this is like such a different situation, right? Like their coworker, their friend has just died. So it makes sense for this one to be kind of like out with continuity. It's just,
You know,
this
I'm
is
agreeing with
an
you.
anomaly.
I'm agreeing with you. I'm just saying more like what's funny, not funny, but interesting about what you're saying is that in 1999. There was no time when everybody came together like that, and it only was for something like this. And later on, they would have people together for like storyline reasons that just made no sense. When really, this is where it should be left for stuff like this, or maybe like Ric Flair retired, like stuff that's like not a normal part of the show. Not that I'm trying to compare Ric Flair's retirement to Owen Hart's death. I'm just saying like it's different parts that are not part of the storyline of the show. So then we got a video tribute to Owen narrated by Vince McMahon. Look, they've got Vince doing the narration. I don't get the feeling that Vince did the narration because he didn't care about Owen Hart and he just wanted to like feel I don't think he was doing it as like a I'm gonna do this as a businessman thing. But I mean, I don't know who else would have done it because Bret wasn't there, Jeff Jarrett's a heel. So I don't know. Was it a better choice, you think, to do the video package, or do you think Vince was the right call? Was he a good choice to do the video package?
I don't know who else you would have had do it, really. I mean, I guess you don't want Michael Cole narrating that, you don't necessarily want like, I mean, I guess they could have called in Blassie, like a Freddie Blassie narrated video package about Owen Hart could have been kind of nice, just
Do you know how many
vocally,
times
but
nowadays I'm like, oh God, I wish we could get Blassie in for something.
I know.
So
But
good.
I think Vince doing it is, I mean, whether it's meant as like a corporate business move or he genuinely cared and wanted his voice to be over that, it means the owner of the company and the man in charge feels remorse about the death of Owen Hart. Like the video package was almost like, I mean, it's easy to nitpick this kind of stuff, right? But what do you even do? Like some of it felt a little too glossy in some ways, but like, saying like Owen Hart was a prankster. He loved to make everyone laugh. Of course, that's what people are going to say because that's who Owen was. And it was very strange hearing Vince McMahon narrate this and talk about, his wife Martha and his children and, how his heart goes out to them and how, Owen loved being in the ring and all that kind of stuff. I mean, who knows what to believe? Owen Hart's not here for us to ask him, but a lot of people were saying he was pretty checked out at this point. He was looking at getting out of the wrestling business. That's what he wanted. And this video package is very much like he lived for wrestling and he lived for this and he did this for his family.
Well, he
And
wanted it in November of 97, and I don't think they kept him. I don't think that they kept Owen Hart from the point of view of like if we give Owen Hart to WCW, we're done. But I think genuinely they really wanted to keep Owen Hart.
they wanted to keep him, but then they didn't really do much of interest with him. Like even when he was tag team champion, he felt like more of an afterthought because it was more about Jeff Jarrett and Deborah. So it's just, It is strange watching that video package, and especially knowing the dissension between Martha Hart and the WWF at this point. Like hearing Vince McMahon say her name
Now, at
was,
this point, they were okay.
I know.
No, I'm just for the listeners who might
Oh,
not know.
yeah. But I'm just saying, like, looking back on it is strange.
But for listeners who don't know, the big thing that became the first part that really made them fall out was Martha Hart had specifically said, please do not show any footage from the funeral on Raw. And on the May 31st episode, they show a little bit of kind of outside the funeral home footage at the beginning of the show. And she felt that was kind of ratings grabby. And that was kind of the beginning of their relationship going downhill. I would recommend, actually, if you've not done it, like reading the book Broken Hearts by Martha Hart is like one of the best books I've ever read. And if you're somebody, I'm not saying this is a bad thing if you are, if you're somebody who kind of thinks, I wish she would just kind of let us enjoy Owen Hart and put him in the Hall of Fame, I really urge you to read that book first before you sort of hammer home on that or double down on it because it's a rough book. And she obviously gives a completely different side to Owen Hart than what we hear on TV. And most of the time, the truth is somewhere in the middle about stuff like that. But yeah, like you say, he wasn't used very well or very prominently when he was there after Montreal. So Vince does the video package. It's a pretty emotional video package. We come back, everybody's clapping. And then we get Mark Henry crying. Jim Ross tells it's going to be a two-hour tribute, 10 matchups, and the performers are going to perform for Owen Hart. So we have a couple of backstage. We have all these sit-down vignettes with wrestlers who kind of tell stories about Owen. The first two are Mick Foley and Bradshaw. Foley talks about his son's favorite wrestler being Owen Hart, and him saying that he thought Dewey thought that being a Nugget was a good thing, and he had his haircut like him. And then we had Bradshaw kind of talking about how, he was so cheap, and the reason he was cheap is because he wanted to retire early, and he thinks it's a real shame that Owen Hart's kids won't get to grow up with him. What did you make of the sit-down videos they did with all the wrestlers? How did that come across?
I thought like some of them came across really strange. I think the Mick Foley one I thought was really, really nice. You know, talking about Owen being Dewey's favorite wrestler and how his kids would chant Nugget in the car because they didn't realize that was supposed to be derogatory. They thought they were honoring Owen by saying that. Like that felt like a really nice and personal thing. The Bradshaw one was fine. Like I think it's later in the show. There are some people that very clearly don't want to be doing this. And I don't know, like, were they made to do this? Were they told
No,
they had a
it
choice?
was just more, there's a room if you want to come in and say some stuff, you can.
Okay, because like the Road Dogg one later on is pretty uncomfortable, but yeah, I mean, I think in this situation, what else are you gonna do? Like, I think it's nice if they're just giving people an opportunity to say stuff about Owen, right? And if people have good stories about him and everything, then I mean, I think it's a nice tribute.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't
it's
know, how did it come across for you? Because I mean, it's just such a weird RAW. JR throughout the broadcast just keeps saying this is going to be one of the most unique episodes or one of the most unique broadcasts in the World Wrestling Federation. And it is, like, by unique he means super fucking weird. The show is weird.
It is weird. I mean, I can't remember exactly how 14-year-old me was thinking about it, but I was very sad. I mean, obviously, when we watched it, the thing is, when I watched it was like the Friday night of that week. So I had like a few days to kind of get used to the idea. Whereas, like, if you're in the States, so you're watching this the next day. So it's a lot fresher. I know, I mean, I was talking to Jamie yesterday about it, and he was saying that, like, people were talking about it on the bus to school in the morning. And there was all these people, everybody was talking about it. I know one of our listeners, Ian, had said like British breakfast television was talking about it the next morning. So it was a big news story across the world. WWF were blasted for keeping the show going, as we've talked about. Meltzer talked about, there's precedence on both sides. The 1972 Olympics weren't cancelled when Israeli athletes were massacred. I don't know that story. So, but there's been motor races that have continued after a driver's been killed. Most other sports don't continue if a participant dies in the field. There was an example of an opening game in Cincinnati where an umpire dropped dead of a heart attack and the game was cancelled. So I think there's a lot of arguments in both ways, but like the problem is afterwards, there's just kind of you have to hold your hands up and just say we made the wrong call. Like there's no way around it. You kind of have to. And then And then this is I thought this was an interesting paragraph to read out from the Observer that we had kind of pondered on the Over the Edge review about it. So Meltzer says, just before all this was going on in front of the fans in Kemper Arena and being somewhat hidden from the rest of the world, with Ross claiming they didn't want to sensationalise what was happening, backstage something else was going on. Vince McMahon was setting up a scene where he'd be in a stretcher and was begrudgingly taken to a hospital in an ambulance. McMahon was put in the ambulance while Patterson and Briscoe did their comedy routine and driven away. Just as it was pulling out and after the scene was cut, Bruce Pritchard screamed that the ambulance needed to come back. Even though doing a mock angle where McMahon would be taken out on an ambulance after Hart had just died would be in the worst possible taste, it was also in the script, and apparently nothing, certainly not good taste, and apparently not even death, was going to make them alleviate key points in the show. So that had been filmed right before. Then there was all the situation with Owen, and then they aired the segment afterwards. Remember we were talking about that, about
Yeah,
was that
about like
live?
whether they had like filmed it before or after his death.
So that's what happened.
I mean, like, I get why it was such a key part of the script because that was important for the main event, right? That Vince McMahon came back. They could have omitted that. They could have omitted Vince McMahon going to hospital with his broken leg. Like, they really could have, because it could have just been like, I don't know. Vince got hurt. They didn't have to show him like going to the hospital, and they didn't have to do commentary the rest of that night. Like we talked about on Patreon, they're talking about Vince McMahon has such a severe injury and this is tragic and all this stuff. And like knowing what happened earlier in that night, they're talking about Vince McMahon's broken leg being such a tragedy. Like it doesn't sit right with me.
And I understand why. It's rough. So then we got a match with Jeff Jarrett versus Test. Jeff Jarrett talks about how Owen was never a nugget, and the crowd are kind of cheering Jeff, and then Jeff puts Test in a sharpshooter, and he taps, and Debra's kind of doing her stick as well. What I thought was interesting, and I'm, look, we're reviewing a wrestling show, so I kind of have to talk about it. I just was very like intrigued that they decided to have Test, who's this big guy they're building up, jobbed out to a sharpshooter by Jeff Jarrett. It was a strange booking. Like, I almost would have put Jeff Jarrett in there with somebody else if that was the finish you were going to do. But I mean, I know I'm splitting hairs and it's a tribute show, so. But it was
But
just
there
a.
was a lot of that on this show, though. Like, there was a lot of just weird wrestling. Like, Jeff Jarrett versus Test is such a strange matchup, right? Especially when, you know, Test has not been that interesting, but they're trying to make him more important as part of the union, right? Because they do announce him as representing the union, Test. But Jeff Jarrett is like pure babyface on this show, right? Because his tag team partner just died, and he gets in there and says Owen was never a nugget, and like you can tell like, he's having a rough time because his friend just died yesterday, and then winning with a sharpshooter. I mean, in tribute to the man who died in the ring the night before, like Jeff Jarrett just feels super, super babyface, and I get why. Like it again, this show is kind of out with continuity. It's very strange. It doesn't really fit in WWF, right? But I mean, I agree. Like having Test just lose to Jeff Jarrett was strange. I felt the same about Billy Gunn later on with Mankind. Like, what even are you doing? Like some of the matchups on this show are just weird. It really feels like we've entered the Twilight Zone.
Yeah, the very strange kind of booking decisions of how they were doing things. I mean, it doesn't really matter, you're paying tribute to Owen Hart, but yeah, it was just like odd decisions.
Because the wrestlers had a choice whether to wrestle or not, too, right? Like, I
yes.
think I remember reading that in Mick Foley's book or something. Like, they gave us the choice whether to wrestle or not. I did, and I found it healing. I think I remember him saying.
Yeah. Then we got two more videos. We got Mark Henry reading a poem. He just couldn't even finish. I mean, he was just so upset about everything. And then we got Draws, who was talking about what a great guy Owen was. It's very weird watching Draws do this interview when we know that in less than 6 months he's going to be paralyzed for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
It's really strange. Then we had X-Pac and Kane against the Brood in a tag title match. I don't know why I found it very weird that the tag titles were on the line. Like, in my brain, I'm like, so everybody's performing for Owen Hart, but like, if the tag titles are on the line, it almost feels like that's a storyline thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it was fine, and the wrestling was decent, but it just, I don't know. I would never have noticed it when I was 14, or maybe I didn't, I've forgotten. It's very possible. Jamie usually screams at his phone when he's listening to these because he remembers everything I don't, because he is Rain Man. But yeah, I was just kind of like, because like JR advertising, well, he's all the tag titles being lined tonight, and I'm like, okay.
Like, all right.
Like, All
That's
right.
cool, I guess. That's fine. Yeah, I mean, it does feel weird for the titles to be on the line. But I mean, the titles are on the line all the time, like for no reason. So, and they have been building to Mark Henry and D'Lo versus Kane and X-Pac. So that's, I don't know. It didn't really bother me that the titles were on the line. I actually quite liked this match. I thought it was pretty good. Like, again, Mark Henry is not fantastic at wrestling, but he is good at being a big man who people can kind of bounce off of. And I don't know. I like the combination of these two teams. I think they wrestle together very well. And I liked, you know, just wrestling wise, I like that Kane throws X-Pac onto, does he throw him onto D'Lo? And he pins D'Lo?
He does, yeah, he does throw one to Demo.
Yeah. So, I mean, I like that. I like their tandem offense. I like the continued story of Kane and X-Pac kind of coming together,
No,
but it does.
not D'Lo, sorry, because it's the Brood.
Oh, the Brood.
It's the
Yeah.
Brood, yeah.
Sorry. I
D'Lo
was
and
thinking
Mark
of
Henry
Over
comes
the
later,
Edge.
sorry.
Yeah. But yeah, like, who does he throw him onto?
Onto
Gangrel? Gangrel,
Gangrel.
then.
Gangrel, not D'Lo.
So, yeah, and having. Then I just take back everything I said because I was thinking of the Over the Edge match. I've watched a lot of things all in a row and I've been very tired the entire time.
We'll pick this up to ignore that fact. Do you know the strangest thing on the show? And I don't even want to like critique it because I just don't know. So like China talks about Owen Hart and it's very nice, but the Triple H part just doesn't sit right with me. I don't like it.
It's weird.
I feel like he is talking about him in a way that I just don't buy.
Because like were they ever close? Like, 'cause Triple H is like distraught through this interview.
He is, and I don't doubt that they were friends, but I don't know. I just in my head I'm going. I mean, look, you were very content to not be the nicest person to that family 18 months ago.
Well, and I mean, it especially, and I know that obviously this is a wrestling angle and stuff, but like, I still remember when Triple H just beat Owen Hart for the European Championship, and Owen never got comeuppance for that, right? Like, Owen never really got his moment in the sun after that. It was just like, nope, I win, and I'm Triple H because I'm awesome, even though my leg hurts or whatever. I never liked that at all. Like, just as a fan of Owen, I didn't like that whole situation. And I don't know, like I can't judge him because I don't know. Like, grief is strange. Like, sometimes you lose someone who doesn't seem like they should be super close to you, but it does hit you really hard. So I don't want to be like he wasn't remorseful and he didn't miss his friend or colleague or whatever, but it was strange.
Yeah, it just didn't sit right with me. So then we had a Dave Heppner tribute to Owen Hart that led us into the Hardy Boys with Michael Hayes against Taka Michinoku and Funaki. It was a pretty fun match, actually. In the end, Matt finishes off Funaki, I think it was, with I think what would go on to be the Twist of Fate. Bruce
I was
Pritchard.
happy to see Kai and Tai again. It's been a long time.
It has. It was nice to see them. Bruce Pritchard does a tribute to Owen. Dustin does one. Dustin Runnels, a very funny story about Hot Sauce and Harley Race, and my God, Dustin Rhodes looks young.
Doesn't he? He looks like a baby child.
He looks like a mid-20s man. So strange.
It's very strange.
We have Hardcore Holly versus Ken Shamrock, and Ken Shamrock destroys Hardcore Holly in about a minute with the ankle lock, which I thought was good. And we also got Hardcore. We now have Hardcore Holly. I can't remember when it debuted, but Hardcore Holly's famous theme song, which I'm a big fan of. So. He's now got his tune that would go on, that will go on to be his one for a few years. But yeah, Shamrock beating Holly was good. I liked that Shamrock after the match was going nuts, but then pointed up to the roof, kind of like to Owen. I'm not a
Well, Ken
go
Shamrock and Owen Hart had some really great, you know, matches and stuff together too. So it yeah, and it's another weird thing. Like, I didn't think I was going to see Ken Shamrock versus Hardcore Holly on a show, right? Like, this has a very like house show vibe in a way because it's just like these weird matchups that don't really seem to make any sense, but they're interesting. And I liked Ken Shamrock just destroying Hardcore Holly.
We got Farouk and Tess talking about Owen Hart. Then we got Mankind versus Billy Gunn. And they kind of had like almost like a storyline match. But at one point, Mankind's got Socko ready. Billy Gunn makes his way to the ring with a chair, but he ends up getting Socko. But it's already over because when did the DQ happen? What was the DQ about?
Was there a DQ? I thought Mankind just won.
By what?
Socko.
Oh, did he win by Socko? Okay. There you go.
Yeah, because Billy Gunn had the chair raised. I actually timed it really well. It looked really slick. Billy Gunn had the chair raised, and as he was going to go to hit Mankind, he put Sako on, and Billy Gunn was on the outside, like he was kind of in the ropes and stuff. So I don't really know how it could end when he was like on the outside of the apron and in the ropes, but I didn't think it was a DQ because he didn't actually hit Mankind.
That makes sense because I kind of looked away and I was like watching this at one point when I didn't really have time to rewind. So that now makes more sense to me.
But it was a strange decision given that like Billy Gunn has been kind of an up and coming like rising star lately, and I know that he goes on to win a thing soon, and so it was just weird to have him lose to Mankind here. It was just another kind of weird situation, like you said with Test earlier, but it was fine. Mankind just shouldn't be wrestling right now.
No, and luckily he is he's going to be taking some time off relatively soon.
Good.
Mankind does a woo after it for Owen Hart. Jeff Jarrett does an interview, which is one of the most heart-wrenching of the night. It's very, very sad to watch, and you can tell that Jeff Jarrett and Owen Hart were just really good friends, and it's really sad. Edge then does one where he calls Owen the leader of a merry little band called the Canadian Mafia, which was nice. That then led us into the Acolytes against D'Lo Brown and Mark Henry. And so D'Lo ends up like rolling up Bradshaw and pinning him, but like Bradshaw kicks out at two. It's a very sloppy end to what actually was a better brawl than I would have thought it was going to be, given the performers involved.
It was better than I expected because the Acolytes are involved, but like it wasn't great. And then the ending just kind of felt like Bradshaw not wanting to get pinned, right? Like it was that Legion of Doom thing that Finn always talks about, where like they kick out right away and they get mad, and like because Bradshaw's raging afterwards and he's like, I didn't get pinned, da, da, da. It was sloppy, but it almost like I don't know, it almost worked for me just because it was like, yeah, Bradshaw's a dick. So, of course, this is what he would do, and it makes it feel more like, I don't know, less choreographed and scripted, I guess. But it was fine.
Then we had Pat Patterson talking about Owen Hart, Hardcore Holly talking about him. That led us into Road Dogg versus The Godfather. Road Dogg is doing it for Owen tonight, but Godfather says, instead of fighting, why don't we go downtown and light it up with a hose? Road Dogg agrees to burn one with him and tell some Owen stories. So, I'm
So they don't
sure
wrestle, they just go get high.
I'm sure Owen Hart would have been really happy that Godfather and Road Dogg took some prostitutes to a bar and took drugs.
It's exactly what he would have wanted. Road Dogg was interesting on this show. Road Dogg seemed pissed to be there.
Yeah, we'll come back to him when his segment because that's a good one to talk about. We get Paul Bearer talking about Owen, which is really weird because like he's so Paul Bearer, and then to see him as not being Paul Bearer was odd. X-Pac, you could tell, was very shaken by the whole thing. Then we got Al Snow versus Triple H. China's still doing her, heel shtick. She dicks Al Snow at one point. Pedigree time, 1, 2, 3. Triple H gets the win. It was short, nothing really to talk about. But I guess the people in the building got to see a couple of names, so that was that.
Yeah, I mean these matches are all just so weird and out of nowhere that there's not that much to say about them. I mean, this wasn't like great because it was Triple H versus Al Snow.
Then we get Road Dogg. And Road Dogg is not happy. Does not seem happy about having to do this. Thinks it's too soon. He talks about, we both have kids and all that kind of stuff. The Road Dogg one was a really interesting interview to watch.
It was. And I mean, even when he cut his promo before the match, he's like, I'm really not in the mood for this tonight. Like he actually just says straight up, like on stage in the ring, like, I am not in the mood to do this tonight, but we're doing this for Owen. And then like that's Road Dogg's the one why I asked you if people had a choice whether to do these interviews or not, because Road Dogg didn't seem like he had a choice. He was like, it's too soon to be asking me about Owen. Like he stumbled over his words. And for someone who's so good at talking, for him to be just like stumbling over his words and not knowing what to say and just obviously distraught about the whole thing, it's heart-wrenching. It really is. And he didn't look like he, and he cuts it off early too. He's just like, no, I can't do anymore.
Yeah, and it almost felt kind of like hard to watch. Almost felt like it was just, yeah, he wasn't ready to do this, so I don't
He
really.
wasn't ready to do this, and it felt like he should be left alone in his grief a little bit longer and not having a camera shoved in his face.
Gerald Briscoe did one. Look, Briscoe was fine, but he felt very corporate to me, so I just don't really. It
Yeah.
didn't really do much for me. Weirdly enough, my favorite match of the night was Big Show versus the Goldust and the Blue Meanie, and I don't know why. They were the first match that really made me actually kind of smile, because Goldust and Blue Meanie are doing their shtick, and then Big Show does this big double clothesline, and I don't know. I thought this was fun in a weird squash kind of way.
I mean, it was definitely a squash. Like, that's exactly what it was. It didn't really do that much for me, I guess, because Goldust and Blue Meanie have actually been kind of endearing lately. Like, I've come around to Goldust and Blue Meanie as a pair because I think they're just so ridiculous. And, like, Big Show has gotten marginally more interested in being there from all, like, the looks of things, but he's still just not really my favorite. I mean, he basically just, like, choke slams them both and pins them both and is like, I'm the Big Show. So it was fine.
Then we have the, so I'd been like I was watching the show and I was like totally fine. I didn't really tear up or anything like that. And then Deborah talked, and I was not prepared for for remembering that one. And she just like falls apart. She just can't handle it. And
Well, she says at the beginning she's gonna cry through the whole thing, and she does.
yeah, but she yeah, she was the one that felt the most real to me, and the one that I was just like, yeah. I couldn't really handle it, so that was the roughest one for me to watch. She was just talking about, you know, like how she saw Owen right before he was going to go to this thing, and then, you know, life's too short and we take people for granted. And I thought hers was the best, or not the best, but it's the one that connected with me the most. So the Deborah one is the one that I really get choked up at and kind of lost it a little bit. So
Hers was one of the ones that felt most like hers and Jarrett's, I would say.
felt authentic.
They felt authentic in the sense of like they knew him very well and they saw him day to day, right? Because they rode with him. So it makes sense that they would be very close. You know, like even her saying that, you know, she was concerned about her outfit beforehand. And Owen was like, well, I mean, you could like, you know, fix it or, you know, wear something else or whatever. She's like, yeah, I could do that. And like that's the kind of stuff that they were talking about right before he died, because no one knew that this was going to happen, obviously. And it's those little like moments and glimpses into someone's life that make them feel more authentic, like those kinds of stories, I guess. So, I mean, I liked her interview. She didn't seem She seemed different than Road Dogg. It didn't seem like she wasn't ready to do this. It felt more just like a loving tribute to a friend. And I don't know, like I would say a lot of the ones felt authentic and felt nice throughout the show, like Jarrett's, for instance, and even like, you know, guys who might not have known him quite as well, like Edge or whatever, like they had really nice things to say, but she felt really, really genuine here.
Then we got one from Shane McMahon as well, which, you know, there's a bit where he kind of he talks about how far the McMahon and Hart family go back and just starts crying. And I always got the sense that he just didn't want Montreal to happen and hates that it did. And
It
this
almost
stuff.
it seemed like there was a lot of regret in Shane's voice.
Yes, and he was too young at that point to really have any say, you know? Main event time is The Rock versus Val Venus. They have a match that goes like 10
Which, I mean,
seconds.
did that, like, just talking about the Hart McMahon family thing, like, did that feel disingenuous to you? For them to, like, for Vince McMahon to narrate in the video package how far back their families go, and for Shane to say that kind of thing on the broadcast and say, you know, oh, our families go back so far. Like, there is bad blood between those families at this point already, before
So
Owen died.
Brett had went to a WWF house show in April of 99 to catch up with friends. And it was kind of all over the news that he had went backstage to a Calgary house show, you know, because like, was he making up with people? And apparently he was still like pissed, but I think that he was, I feel like he was opening the communication again a little bit. And then this kind of just, you know, stopped it because we'll talk about it next week maybe, but like Vince and Brett have like a meeting in a park bench like a week from now. In
Okay.
1999, and so I think at this point there was kind of everybody was sad, and Vince didn't say too much about Brett. The reason the Shane thing worked more for me is because I don't really associate Shane with Montreal, like
No.
I associate that as a Vince thing, and Shane was just kind of like young, and I feel like Shane always regretted it, and Shane would have rather it didn't have to go down that way,
Yeah,
but
that makes
then
sense.
Vince would listen to Shawn. I don't think Shane would have been as much a Shawn guy. I think he was always more of a Brett guy. Rock beats Val Venus in a squash at the end, and he does a thing at the beginning saying he wants to electrify for Owen, and then JR in commentary basically breaks down and cries. You can hear him.
He says he hopes to be as good a man as Owen so he can see him again someday.
And then that brings out Austin, who comes out, and again, I guess the interesting thing is Austin and Owen were not close at all,
No.
because Owen had done the pile driver at SummerSlam 97 and never apologized for it. But Austin did come out and did the classy thing and did the beer toast to him, and that was the end of the show. So how do you feel about how the end of the show? They did Rock kind of going over in a squash and saying something to Owen, and then Austin coming out and doing the beer toast. Was it a good ending? Is that the way they should have ended it?
I think it makes sense. It did feel weird having Austin be the final one to toast him, given that he and Owen, like, he's the only person that doesn't seem like he was close to Owen Hart. Like, he's the only one who has something negative to say about Owen Hart. And it's an understandable negative point, right? Like, you broke my neck and didn't apologize for it. That is something that would annoy me too. So it did feel strange. And the look on Austin's face is very hard to read. Like, I don't know if he regretted that they didn't, like, make up. I mean, it's not like they were at each other's throats and hated each other or anything like that. They weren't close, right? From all accounts.
No, they were not.
So it's, I don't know, it felt strange, but the whole thing just felt strange. I don't know what else you would have done. And having the biggest star in the company kind of, do a beer toast to him and end it on the graphic. I think it was nice.
Yeah, I think so. And it's one of the most memorable Raws of all time, and for a lot of reasons. Yeah, I mean, you can't really rate it. It's not a rateable show.
I mean, it's memorable in the fact that it happened, but do you think that there are actually moments on it that are memorable? Because as I'm thinking about it almost seems to be more memorable as just like an event and not like this happened on it or this happened on it or this person said this.
Yeah, I think it's more. I mean, there's memorable parts to it, but I just can't judge it properly. I feel weird in any way, sort of rating the show or being
Oh,
like
I
trying.
wouldn't rate it,
And
no.
but I mean, even talking about like the memorableness of it, like I don't know. It's just it is memorable to me for I guess just the fact that it's an anomaly of a show. There's not really anybody else who had a show. I
Benoit.
mean, well, if you let me finish, what I was going to say was there was not really anybody who had a show. If you take away the Benoit thing, which they basically erased from memory.
Right.
So, when I'd finished, that's what I was about to say. So, yeah, so the Owen one is really the only one that now stands the test of time. Everybody else who's kind of died, we'd end up having like segments of a show or whatever. So, there you go. Anyway, let's get into listener questions. Mark Borden wants to know, it's a bit grim to ask, but how did you and Sandra hear the news? I know Sandra wasn't watching then, but it was a major news story even in the UK.
For me, I didn't know about this until after I started watching wrestling and people started telling me about the history of wrestling, like, oh, and then this one wrestler died in the ring and it was really tragic. So it was never something that came across my, news or pop culture awareness in 1999.
I found out the next day. Now Jamie says that I found out the next night. I don't think I did. I'm pretty sure I found out the next morning because I just don't. I wouldn't have got. I wouldn't have been able to get through school that day, or maybe somebody told me at school. I don't know, but I found out the next morning. Paul Michael Benson, what happened with Owen's contract? Did WWE pay the remainder of his deal to Martha and the kids? I always wondered how sensitive the company was towards Owen's family in the aftermath. And actually, if you can go and listen to JR's new podcast, Grilling JR, when he talks about Over the Edge 99, and one of the things that he talks about on there is that the WWE paid $18 million in an out of court settlement to Martha Hart and the family, which I guess takes care of what the contract would have been plus the damages and stuff. So that is what happened with that. Stevie Spence wants to know thoughts on the authenticity of the grief of the wrestlers they had paid tribute to. Owen, Mark Henry looked broken when he spoke, one or two hours, not so much. The only one that really sticks out to me is one that I just have real issues with is Triple H. How about you?
I don't think that anyone really stood out as like inauthentic. Even Triple H, like that one felt weird to me. It felt weird that he was so incredibly like distraught. But I guess like I don't think you can judge people's grief that way. Like, I mean, it was weird to have like Bradshaw and Draws be talking about Owen. Like, I wouldn't see them as close, but I don't know those guys. Like, I don't know them backstage. And again, like grief hits you in different ways. Like every time I go to funerals and stuff, like there are sometimes that, you break down and cry, even if you weren't super close to the person. And there are sometimes that you were super close to the person and you can like still tell funny stories and just kind of laugh about how ridiculous someone was. So I don't know. Like, I don't think that any of them felt inauthentic or super corporate. I mean, Briscoe felt like corporate, but I don't think any of them were in a bad way. I kind of expected it to feel more surfacey and more like false, and it actually felt very real to me.
I think that the reason that I do kind of judge the Triple H one a little bit is that I think that he maybe should have just not done what he did on TV, because it almost felt like it was more in his own mind to make up for stuff that he had done, which I don't think that we really needed to see. Liam Hall, how much of an effect do you think Owen's death had on WWE in the long term? How does it compare to the Guerrero and Benoit deaths? Surely WWE is more at fault for Owen's deaths than the others, but it seems the deaths of the other two are more detrimental to the company. I mean, the Benoit one is, yeah, I mean, it's rough because like the Guerrero thing, I don't. Eddie Guerrero was always going to come back and wrestle, and no matter what you did, he would find ways around it. I don't know exactly how much. I mean, they obviously knew he was taking steroids because there's a reason that he looked jacked at the end, but. And then the Benoit thing. I don't honestly think that they in any way thought that Benoit was going to do what he did. Like, how could you know that somebody was going to do that? And, like, nobody knew that much about CTE and all that kind of stuff. Like, even if you watch that Concussion movie with Will Smith, the true story, like, nobody knew that kind of stuff. So, yeah, the Owen one being one, I think people have such a fond memory of Owen Hart. That why do people not blame WWE more? Well, I don't necessarily think it's WWE's, like, WWE hired a guy and they didn't put as much effort into checking into him. I think he was like the guy who worked with the guy who did Sting's entrances, as opposed to being the guy who did do Sting's entrances.
Because didn't the
So
guy lie to them or
he did
something?
lie
Like
to him,
he's,
yeah. But then, like, I've worked in a lot of production stuff and things where, like, you do take people at their word, so maybe. I think maybe the Benoit thing is more talked about because of the fact that that had an effect on other innocent people. And the Guerrero one has more of an effect because he sort of drove himself into the ground. But, like.
Well, and I think like with the Owen thing, it being an accident, like it just being a pure accident, right? It wasn't like part of the systematic problem in WWE. Like Benoit had concussions and, possible like steroid stuff people talk about or like whatever. Like he had a lot of things leading up to that where like the wrestling industry, I guess, like it's more an indictment of the wrestling industry. Whereas, I mean, Owen Hart's harness failed and he fell to his death. And that's awful and that's tragic. But it, like, because it didn't affect other people and because it wasn't part of like a systematic problem, I don't think it's like, you don't have like tons of news show discussions about like checking the harness safety of performers because it's just such a weird blip in time.
It's almost one of those ones where you hate to say it sort of like passingly, but like it's a mistake that could happen. And, you know, I feel, yeah, it sucks.
With
But
like incredibly tragic consequences, but it's not something that like, I mean, yeah, like double check your harnesses, like check your safety, but it's not, I don't know, it's not as much part of like a problem with wrestling culture, Owen Hart's death, as opposed to the others that we've talked about. Because even like Pillman's death, like that was more systematic.
But it's a valid thing, Liam. So just to finish off here, I'll give you one, Sondra, and then me one. Michael Farrow wants to know, what was your favourite period of Owen Hart in the Retro Raw journey that you watched?
Probably like Slammy Owen Hart, who like was just such an absolute dickhead. And, I won it all by myself. And, that's my favorite Owen is when he's just being an utter prick about everything. I don't know. He always made me laugh when he was doing that kind of stuff. That's probably my fave. How about you?
What is my favorite Owen Hart journey on Retro Raw? My favorite overall, like my overall favorite Owen Hart thing, and I'd love to actually kind of get a video like thing of it that Sondra I could sit and watch and do for a special, is the stuff he did with Brett when they did the initial feud, because it's
Oh,
brilliant.
okay. I
Like,
would love to watch that
there's
actually.
never been a better brother versus brother stuff, and there was loads of, like, you know, you thought they were going to break up, but they stayed together, and there's like loads of different elements to it, which I still say. Survivor Series 1994 should not have been brought back home when the title should have been Owen Hart. Very just quickly, two for me, very, very quickly, I'm just going to quickly answer before Sondra goes. Dave Scott, do you think the WWE would have eventually given him a world title run if he hadn't passed away? I think if he had stuck around and wrestled to like 04, 05, he had a chance to get one of the two belts. But I don't think it was a high chance, and I also don't think he would have stuck around that long. So, and then Adam Gibson wants to know, obviously Saunders learning parts of 99, but for Kenny, take this tragedy as if it didn't happen. How does the rest of 99 shape up? Does Owen being around alter any storylines, any feuds? You call it. Does Owen go to the main event? Does he go to WCW? Do we get Jericho and Owen and Angle versus Owen? Blah, 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 blah. I think he could have stuck around maybe till the end of his contract, which would have been maybe the end of 2000 or something, or at some point in 2000. And I think he would have left, though. Because the amount of stuff that you read from Martha in the book, I think he was going to leave. I think he would have stayed in the mid-card. I think he would have got stuff like Jericho and Owen and Angle versus Owen. But I don't think they would have done that much more with him, because I don't think he was motivated to be there. And, you know, they famously offered him the storyline where he would sort of be around Deborah. And he did not want to. Well, him and Deborah were going to have some sort of like affair, and he just was not up for it whatsoever. So, I think he would have been. I think what we've seen on Retro and what we've talked about and what Sondra always kind of goes, why is he not doing a lot? I think that would have kept up. And then, but if he'd stayed alive and Brett then hadn't got injured, I think he might have gone to WCW had they stuck around. There's so many different like domino effect stuff. Like, if he had not died, would Brett have been okay? Would Brett have gone back to WWF if Owen had stayed alive? Would Owen have then stayed longer in WWF because they would have made up with Brett? Like, there's all this different stuff that could have happened, but we'll never know. So, Sondra, what are the plugs?
Okay, you can find me on Twitter at SondraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. Check us out on Patreon, patreon.com/InsideTheRopes. YouTube.com/InsideTheRopes for all sorts of interview content. And I think that is all right now because there are no tours to sell.
That is it. Not for long. We will have some tours soon, though.
There will be tours. InsideTheRopes.co.uk is our website if you want to just check out what's going on.
It is. So we'll be back on Wednesday, and we're going to get into some good conversations. I'm very excited to talk about this whole Jim Cornette double or nothing conversation, which has sparked a lot of controversy, which we are going to hopefully get a chance to have a bit of a chat about. And tonight, apparently, Brock Lesnar's cashing in on his Money in the Bank contract, so there's loads of stuff to talk about. But I hope this
theoretically.
I hope this podcast will be okay for you guys. It's a weird one to do. I don't think we really did it justice, but we tried. So here is Enough is Enough. It's Time for a Change, the Owen Hart theme tune that I like. It's really whiny. go watch an Owen Hart match tonight if you get a chance, and we'll be back soon. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Well, enough is enough, and it's time for a change. I tried to be a nice guy. Come and take your best shot. I was a victim. I snapped. Turn your backs on me!